Bollinger v. United States of America.
May it please the Court, my name is Tom Bingham. I represent the appellants in this matter. Actually, I represent Claire Bollinger, but I'm going to be arguing today on behalf of all the plaintiffs, all the appellants. This case involves claims against the government for an inadequate and negligent airworthiness inspection of an amateur-built aircraft by an FAA air safety investigator. The appellants contend that the inadequate and negligent inspection was a proximate cause of the subsequent crash of the aircraft in which appellants Claire Bollinger suffered catastrophic injuries. Appellant Tom Bollinger was injured and the aircraft was destroyed. Appellants are seeking reversal of the trial court's judgment, summary judgment of dismissal, premised on the application of the discretionary function exception to the Federal Tort Claims Act. Appellants further seek remand of the case to the district court for discovery and a determination of the government's percentage of fault of the accident under RCW 422.070. In order to prevail on their motion, the government needed to prove both prongs of the test for application of the discretionary function defense as articulated in Varig, Berkowitz, and other applicable cases. To wit, first, the government had to establish the challenged actions involved an element of judgment or choice. This discretionary act requirement is not satisfied under the Berkowitz case if a federal statute, regulation, or policy specifically prescribes the course of action for an employee to follow.
Well, you know, we have lots of cases, or not lots, but a number of cases that say specifically that the FAA's certification procedures in various contexts are discretionary, right? Well, why is this inspection different from those?
Your Honor, the initial case was the Varig case, and then there are subsequent progeny both in this court and in other jurisdictions, of course. Varig dealt with type certification of commercial aircraft. There's a very complex and detailed system for FAA oversight of design and production of commercial aircraft. And what they do is they delegate this authority, the FAA delegates authority to trained individuals at the manufacturer who monitor design of aircraft, the production of aircraft, and the quality control of aircraft. And what the FAA does and what the issue was in Varig is they simply spot check the manufacturer because they don't have the resources to do all the engineering that is necessary for production of the commercial aircraft. The present case deals with a very different regulatory situation and certification. In fact, if you look at all the cases, sometimes they use some sloppy language in terms of the certification applying across the board to type certification and other types of certifications. But the very case specifically just addressed the spot check procedure. There are a number of other cases that have been brought against the government and the FAA where they've been found liable for certifications. For instance, there's I don't recall the name of it right now, but it's in the brief. There was a case where a pilot was improperly certified, given a license, and after a doctor did an inadequate physical of the pilot. And there are a number of other cases where the court has or the courts have found that the discretionary function exception didn't apply and that there was liability.
Well, can you cite a case that involved an FAA aircraft certification that says that? I don't know of one.
If it's not in the brief, then I can't, Your Honor. But this, again, is a different situation because this is an airworthiness certification. I'm not aware of any cases where an airworthiness certification was at issue. And The airworthiness certificate is specific to a particular.
Wasn't that GATX a type of airworthiness certification?
That was a supplemental type certificate.
Basically a type of airworthiness
certificate. Yeah, it's a type of airworthiness certification.
I mean, it's a commercial part certification, a supplemental type certificate, but why it doesn't really matter whether it's recreational, commercial, or business craft, does it?
You see, you know, here, when the Bollinger, or, you know, Bollinger made the application for certification, when you make that application, the owner himself certifies that it's airworthy, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So in that sense, it's just the same. And, you know, if he feels he can't do it himself, there's plenty of people he can hire to do it for him. Just the way, you know, a Boeing can hire people to do it.
Right, right, which they attempted to do in this case.
Mike, I go back to my original question. What's the difference? Legally.
Legally, the difference is that there is not a spot check procedure in place for amateur-built aircraft.
Is there some directive from the FAA that says they have to check every detail?
Well, there's FAA Order 8132D that describes a very detailed seven-part document inspection process and seven-part aircraft inspection process that the inspector has to follow. It's mandatory. Our experts tell us that, and that it was evidence before the trial court, that that would include the checking of safeties.
This is an initial certification.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So what would be the difference between that and the initial commercial certification?
Well, in the commercial context, that's the airworthiness certifications are delegated to the manufacturers, my understanding.
It doesn't really matter because the question is they really assume the role of FAA employees in that context.
Right.
So that it doesn't really matter whether they're employed by Boeing or Airbus or whomever. So I guess I'm having some trouble. I mean, it seems that I'm sympathetic to the design of this aircraft. Obviously, at least according to these records, had some defects. But
correct.
That would seem to go against the manufacturer rather than the FAA.
Well, unfortunately, in these cases, the manufacturers are usually fly by night. So, obviously,
small aircraft
yes.
situation. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, that's why I say I'm sympathetic to the situation, but I am a little like Mr. Toshima. I'm a little hard pressed to really distinguish this case in terms of principles from the GATX airlog case.
Well, again, in this case, there's a specific procedure for airworthiness certification that has to be followed by the airworthiness inspector or the DAR, the designated airworthiness representative. And in the regulatory scheme, at least the FAA considers DARs to be the primary persons that certificate these aircraft. In other words, they get the authority from the FAA, and they're privately designated. And they do a very thorough job, including the checking of safety and, you know, all other matters.
Does the FAA or any other regulation require that your clients have insurance on?
I don't believe so. Yeah, I don't believe so. Nor does it
require a car.
No, nor does it require the parts manufacturers to have insurance. But in this context, there's this policy to delegate the responsibility to the DAR. So the argument is made in regard to resources and allocation of resources. In that respect, there is a procedure in place. The air safety inspector for the FAA has the authority to say, I won't do the inspection, go see a DAR if he doesn't have the time to do it. Once he undertakes it, he has to follow the procedures that are set forth in the FAA order. And in the circular that is sent to, that's been produced by the FAA and is sent to amateur builders they say right in the circular that the initial airworthiness inspection is an inspection to assure that the aircraft is safe to fly. And in this case, it obviously was not, and our contention is that that's something that should have been picked up by the air safety inspector, the FAA inspector, and or he should have delegated that to a DAR. And if the DAR had missed this, there's no question that they'd be responsible.
Does the regulation say anything more than there must be an inspection? Does it specify anything about what will be done during the inspection?
It does, Your Honor, and that's let me give you the cite to.
Well, just tell me generally what it says should be done and what either wasn't done or was done.
Well, the key language in there, they list six parts in the visual inspection. The inspection ports are all supposed to be open, the engine in plain view, and the specific section that applies is part four under 8132D section B, and that states the flight control to determine that the flight control system, engines, propellers, pitot-static, and associated instruments operate properly. According to our experts, one is a DAR, the other is a professor of aviation mechanics, this would have been obvious to any inspector that looked at it. It's an unusual design. It's not an aviation quality design, and it should have been. It would have been obvious to any inspector. They both say they would have picked it up right away because it wasn't safe.
So your argument then is that there's no policy involved or no decision to be made by the inspector.
That's correct.
But that the inspector failed to follow the rule.
That's correct.
Give me the specific rule that he failed to follow. What's the citation?
Well, the specific provision that he did not follow was this part four. And you know,
you're talking about 8132D, where it says aircraft inspection, and then they list
correct.
Seven things you're supposed to do.
Correct. Yeah, there's a seven-part records inspection.
You're supposed to make the flight control system, engine, propellers. You're supposed to make sure they operate properly.
Correct.
Okay.
And are you alleging that he either didn't look at that part or that if he did, he was negligent in doing it?
We don't know specifically what he looked at because we had been unable to do any discovery and depose the inspector, and there's no declaration or affidavit from the inspector. He did look at the engine. It was in plain sight. Attached to Mr. Bollinger's declaration are pictures of the engine prior to the time that it received its type certification that show the purge valve, which is the part that we're talking about right on top of the engine. He did look at the engine. He did perform a two-hour inspection, according to Mr. Bollinger. When I say he, I'm referring to the aviation inspector.
He said he did perform the inspection, but he did it negligently?
Correct. Either did it negligently or failed to look at this part, even though he's required by the procedures to review the part, that he's required by the order that governs the airworthiness inspection.
Right,
I think
thank you, Counsel.
I'm well over my time. If you have any more questions,
no.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Barbara O'Malley. I represent the United States in this litigation. Let me just say briefly, as in our brief, we rely upon VERIC, and which is broadly interpreted under the law of this circuit to cover implementation, not just the spot check, not just the design that was adopted by the FAA. But the Supreme Court in VERIC held that both the FAA's choice of a system for reviewing aircraft for compliance with safety standards and the implementation of that system involves social, economic, and political policy judgments.
Well, let's assume that you have a system that you're supposed to do A, B, C, D, E, F, and the inspector does A, B, C, and stops. What policy judgment could that possibly involve?
That's not the situation here. I agree with you, Your Honor, if there is a specific requirement that the government employee must follow, that destroys the first prong of the discretionary function exception. He has no choice but to follow, and it therefore, and because the policy has been adopted and made mandatory by his agency, could not possibly be said to be implementing the policy of the FAA or the agency.
And the second question would be, if he does it, but does it negligently?
I'm sorry?
If he does do A, B, C, D all the way through, but does it negligently?
He is also, the government is also protected from liability there because, of course.
And is that not what the plaintiff was alleging here?
That's what happened here. In our view of the order, we interpret, start with, the starting with the complaint filed in this case and the declaration filed by Tom Bollinger, who was there when the inspector looked at the aircraft, it unequivocally says he did the first part of the required inspection. That's, he looked at all of the records to see if they met the requirements of the regulations. And then he looked at, according to the complaint and the declaration, the engine and the purge valve, which is part of the fuel injection system. They say he looked at it. The only requirement is a visual requirement. It is then left to the discretion of the FAA safety investigator to go farther than that. If for some reason, based upon his knowledge or he's concerned, it's left to his discretion because he has to balance. And we get back to the statute and the regulations. He's got at least three competing factors, goals to balance. The safety mandate, he has to, and in addition, he has to consider encouraging the development of civil aviation, and he has to do all that in the face of restraint, fiscal restraints, yes.
But in this case, are you saying there were specific steps that the inspector had to go through, one, two, three, and four?
There is a seven checklist, item checklist.
Which is what Mr. Mingus said now.
And there's nothing in that second, sorry, that's those seven items that requires him, or the inspector in this case, to examine the purge valve.
No, but if he has to go through seven steps, and is there either one step that he didn't go through? First of all, is there one step he didn't go through? No, answer is no.
The answer is no, based upon the complaint and the declaration filed.
So the complaint is, in going through one of the steps, he performed his job negligently. Is that right? Is that the complaint?
That's correct.
Now, and your position is that in performing that step, it was a discretionary function?
Yes, because under the law of this circuit.
Well, why was it discretionary if it's mandatory?
There's a test for mandatory, and it requires a specific requirement that the individual.
When you say specific, you mean detailed.
Well, just maybe some words saying in the checklist, look at the purge valve.
And see if there's a wire through the screw or something like that.
I don't know that it has to be that specific, but if you look at the checklist, you'll see, I think, item four talks about looking at the engine to determine if it's operable in operating condition. And then, of course, it's left to the discretion of the inspector to determine what conduct or what to do to make that determination. And that's the other problem under the law.
If the complaint is, as I understood counsel, that if you had looked at it, you would have seen this.
Well, I can tell you this. You know, this is a motion to dismiss.
Yes.
And the allegation is that this wire was not in place. The purge valve was there. I mean, you could see the stop screw. It was there.
You mean a procedural inspection?
But yes.
Go ahead.
That's exactly right. If that is true, that the stop screw was there, that's what the inspector would have seen. If you, after the accident, of course, the stop screw was gone and you could look into the hole. This hole is very small. It's something like a quarter of an inch to three-eighths at the most. And when this inspector has been told, remember, again, this is visual, he sees the stop screw under the allegations of the complaint. Whether they say he should have seen that the wire wasn't there. The wire is underneath the stop screw, as I understand it. Now, that gets more into the negligence aspect, I believe, of this case, which is not before the court. All that is before the court are the usual issues, the usual test, the familiar test of the Supreme Court.
So what you're saying is under this certification procedure, although the order says, well, you know, you have to lift up the cowling and look at the engine, that the extent to which the inspector makes a visual inspection or whether he might even go further, that's up to his judgment.
Yes, that is left to his.
To how detailed he thinks the inspection should be. Is that what you're saying?
That is right, Your Honor, and that's important because the agency's program requires the inspection made by the applicant, by the builder of this, to look at. They've got three pages of carefully itemized different things to look at and, you know, be sure about, and that's what the FAA inspector relies upon very much exactly as in Varig, that that's where the principal responsibility for complying with the FAA safety requirements, that's where the FAA has placed it and put it.
So as far as these home-built aircrafts are concerned, then, the inspector's job, what it comes down to, is to try to make sure that the owner did what he was supposed to do.
He was required.
In building the aircraft.
That's right, Your Honor.
And in your view, that's discretionary because it's up to each inspector to figure out how detailed that inspection should be.
Yes, under
although the order says you have to look at the engine.
Visual.
Well, isn't the issue here, I thought counsel said that if you had looked at it, you would know that there was something wrong.
No.
Am I misunderstanding?
I think counsel may have misspoken in the complaint in Tom Bollinger's declaration. They say that Mr. Vitito, the inspector, looked at the engine and the purge valve was visible.
Yes.
And he should have detected that the wire was missing, and that's why I tried to explain why it would not have been so, the wire part would not have been so visual.
This is the wire that goes through the screw, right?
Yes. The Tom Bollinger's declaration says that Vitito spent approximately 2 hours reviewing documents and physically examining the plane. Mr. Vitito inspected the engine compartment, and Mr. Vitito specifically looked at the purge valve. That's in the complaint. And then in the declaration, the purge valve was inspected during the inspection. Okay. But the inspector failed to detect that the stop screw was not lock-wired. I haven't quoted these exactly. I'm sorry, I don't have it in my head, but I know, look at the complaint
and
the declaration.
Whatever it is, it has anything to do with the discretionary function. If he did it, there's no doubt. I mean, you're not saying that there's some function he didn't, or something he didn't do that was discretionary. You're just saying he did it. And
he did it negligently.
I think what he's saying is that he looked at the purge valve, but he was negligent in not spotting the defect.
Which doesn't really have anything to do with the discretionary
function. But that doesn't have anything to do with discretionary function. And
so,
from the
so how do you justify the dismissal of this if the issue is whether he was negligent or not?
Well, I just the district court judge was correct in dismissing this because he had before him declarations filed by the plaintiff, and he also had a declaration filed by the government explaining how this system works, backed up by the actual only order that provides guidance to the inspector and how to accomplish, how to do his inspection.
Why isn't this a question for summary judgment rather than dismissal?
As I understand the law, this motion to dismiss, supported as it was, does not have to be converted to a motion for summary judgment because the attack is upon the jurisdiction of the court, and the district court judge has the authority to resolve, the right to resolve that jurisdictional issue.
The negligence is not an issue at this stage. Is that correct?
It is not.
Often the government may or may not be negligent. The question is, can you sue them for it?
Can you sue
really
them in tort? And, of course, we say you can't because there's an express exception.
Okay. Well, in other words, even though you're not admitting it, your position could almost assume the truth of the allegation that the inspector was negligent, right?
That is correct.
Because to your position, it doesn't make any difference.
Because it's irrelevant to the discretionary function jurisdictional issue, yes, Your Honor.
I'm having trouble understanding what the discretionary function has to do with this case at all. And I thought you said it really isn't a question of discretionary function because he performed all the functions. And everybody agrees he performed the functions. And the only question is whether it was negligent. So now you're saying it is, you have no jurisdiction because it's a discretionary function exception.
I'm simply saying that the district court was correct in dismissing it for lack of jurisdiction by reason of the discretionary function exception. I think the plaintiff is incorrect in arguing that the exception does not apply, but the plaintiff is essentially arguing it wasn't enough for them to inspect the purge valve. They had to do more. And the discretionary function applies because that is all that the agency expects of its safety inspectors when they examine, you know, for airworthiness. I wanted to add that in very, the airworthiness.
I think we've gone over by about 50%.
I'm sorry?
I think we've gone over by about half the amount of your time.
I have done that?
No, we did it to you.
I'm sorry.
It's okay, so thank you.
Time always goes quickly up
here. Yes, when you're having fun.
Absolutely. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Do you have anything you want to add in 1 minute? You don't have to.
I think you've covered all the points I wanted to cover in your question.
Thank you. Case just argued will be submitted. The next case is the next case.